Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome back to Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Alperon.
And you shall not pass.
Very much. Yeah, that was epic, man.
That was just a taste of my vibrato. Let's not get into it. With me today, I got my regular host. I got Matthew Aguilar here.
What up? And I am not too Hollywood.
Janelle, you are way too Hollywood. Look at your background. Janelle Wheeler's here with us.
Oh. Hey, everybody.
Definitely too Hollywood. But the man of the people is also back. We have Mr. Turn Up Charlie Ridgely with us today.
What's going on, everybody?
Somewhere there's an applause for that, but we don't have the machine.
Oh, right. That was my mom.
Oh, nice. Hi, Mrs. Ridgely. Today we got a lot to talk about. Charlie's with us because he's seen Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead, so he's here to give us a lowdown. He also has his review up on comicbook.com. We also are going to talk about that Venom Let There Be Carnage trailer, Netflix's Millar World debut, Jupiter's Legacy. We're having a special guest jump on to review Spiral from the Book of Saw. And we have new DC Marvel comics to talk about, and Matt gets to indulge his gamer side once again. Matt's agenda is still alive. So, it's a good geektastic smorgasbord we have for you today. So let's get right to it. We're going to start at the top talking about the Venom Let There Be Carnage trailer. Venom 2.
Are we going to get an Eminem remix? That's the most important.
I mean, I hope so. I hope we get a
comic. Bring in somebody Carnage. Different. Like, bring in, you did.
No, man, it's one. His thing.
No,
now.
Listen. No, yeah. Go full south with Carnage. Bring Yellow Wolf in to do the sequel. That's all I'm saying.
Eminem and Yellow Wolf
make great stuff together.
Slim Shady is the Venom guy.
Word. Yeah. That'd be great.
No, I'm saying a collab. You know, you have Venom from Eminem. You got Carnage from Yellow Wolf. Let them.
Yeah, I mean, a dual thing.
Let them do a 1-2.
I mean, like a guilty conscience type thing. I mean, we haven't had one of those in a long time.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we need one of those kind of like Venom.
Oh, NF. Hell yeah. Please give me that.
I mean, since the Freddy versus Jason, Fabulous and Jadakiss, like, yeah, we need another one of those collaborations. So I like that idea, Charlie. I mean, we're cooking here. So, guys, what did you think about the Venom Let There Be Carnage trailer? The internet and people I talked to seem to be mixed reactions. I don't think it really moved anybody, like a single person. Either way, like if you were into this franchise and enjoyed the first film for what it was, this feels like it was more of that. And, you know, you're going to get more of what you got the first time. But if you didn't like the first one, including Woody Harrelson's Carnage, I don't think moved very many people.
I think it moved people just in further in the directions that they already were leaning.
Yeah, I mean, so like, America, right? Yeah,
yeah.
So.
I mean, like, I loved Venom because of Tom Hardy's foolishness. Like, he went so hard into it and like he knew the assignment and it was awesome. And it seems like now the whole movie is that.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. And so I'm so stoked.
Yeah. And let me be clear too. Like
Woody Harrelson go full Woody Harrelson.
Yeah. Following up with Charlie saying, like, this is the appeal of this movie franchise for me, like right now, is the fact that it's not seeing Venom and symbiotes and CGI fights. It's literally Tom Hardy being on screen talking to himself and then doing voiceovers of the Venom symbiote is the craziest spectacle that I loved about the first movie. I'm turning into Jim. That I liked about the first movie. I liked about the first movie were those scenes of him. I mean, it was like Jim Carrey throwback, right? Like him going in the restaurant and getting in the lobster tank and doing all that stuff was a lot of fun. And that's what they give you in this trailer is they do it kind of, It style by opening with just a scene of the movie of him just preparing breakfast and Venom singing this song and making him his breakfast. And I love that. A lot of people fell off. I mean, I had people messaging me like, what are you like? Did you hit your head? Like, what's wrong with you? Like friends of mine being like, how could you for this? Oh, yeah.
That's the fun of it. Like, that's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. And, but some people
they can have not one fight in this movie and it would be awesome.
But I mean, it could be literally just scenes of individually Tom Hardy talking to himself and Woody Harrelson talking to himself and then collective scenes of them talking to themselves together.
All and that yelling and at Mrs. each other. Chen, and that's all you
yeah, need. And Mrs. Chen is a movie to me. Like, yeah.
I just love the translation stuff of like that half of it's like incomprehensible. And like that he has to translate constantly. Like rah, 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 rah. He's like, oh yeah, no, we had I love
that stuff. That line reading at the end of the trailer when Venom just yells no about the chocolate, like the way that that line is done, I lost it. It's such it's a dumb so thing.
Oh yeah, that was hilarious. So funny. And then it's just good to see, and in that moment it's good because you see them like talking together for the first time because nobody can hear Venom but him. And so like, yeah, Venom's like no, and he's like we had a deal. And that's like you can see their personalities kind of blending.
And it's just about chocolate. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just about chocolate. Yeah. I agree. I'm
passionate about chocolate myself, so.
Right, chocolate's awesome. I did appreciate the elfness of that opening scene. That was a very like elf dish he had.
Oh yeah.
Pancakes and everything. I will say I saw it in the comments. That Crow 0731. At least it showed Carnage and didn't just tease it until it leaked. I appreciated that because that is typically how these roll out. Is like they give you a glimpse and then you don't see it. And it's like I did actually like that we got a full Carnage thing, so we can kind of rule that out. We're good. We saw him. It's great. And but the Venom, like the Tom Hardy Venom, that stuff, the back and forth. Was awesome. I mean, I just that was something that the first trailer couldn't really do, obviously. And so from the first movie, so like having
the first movie didn't want to be that. Tom Hardy just wanted to be that.
Yeah,
right. But like, it's great. I dug that.
Oh, that's what made it good.
Yeah, catch up. What?
And I love that Woody Harrelson. Like, just I don't know. I want to be delicate about this. Woody Harrelson feels like a crazy person in a good way. Like on screen, he knows how to just be wild and weird and crazy, and now he gets to like go follow Tom Hardy on that path from the first movie. It's like I want it to become a game of who's the next actor who's great at just breaking down on screen to join this. Like you watch what Andrew Garfield's done in like Under the Silver Lake and this new movie that he's got mainstream, and he's really buying into this idea of being a crazy actor that really just knows the assignment and goes all in. Like, what does he look like in this going, you know, like just get those actors that know how to get wild and there's endless possibilities for what Venom can be.
I mean, yeah. So we also got one who I'm curious to see is Stephen Graham's character. If you don't know who Stephen Graham is, he's a great character actor who's played like, whatchamacallit. I always think Al Capone in Boardwalk Empire.
So good.
Yeah. And you know, he's played a different kind of roles, but he's going to be Toxin in this, right? The police officer who gets a symbiote and Coxin. I'm really curious to see what he does with this kind of thing.
And Naomi Harris too.
Yeah. Naomi Harris as a Shriek is going to be pretty good too. So as somebody pointed out in the comments, I mean, they could have called this Maximum Carnage because this is basically what we're going to get is it looks like a big Ravencroft breakout. And, you know, and then kind of madness in the streets and Venom.
They're saving that for the third one.
Yeah, unless it sets up Maximum Carnage.
Yeah, they're saving that for the third one. They got to be.
Yeah, well, it seems like, I mean, I'm good. As somebody who really enjoyed the original Carnage storyline, because that's when I really got into comics. And specifically, I think that's the first issue of Amazing Spider-Man I ever purchased. Because my older brother had a collection. Wow. Yeah, my older brother had a collection, but I purchased the first part of Carnage was my first Amazing Spider-Man comic. I'm psyched to see this. And like I said, both for the comic stuff, but also just seeing Woody Harrelson and Tom Hardy talking to themselves and trying to out ham each other is going to be glorious.
And by the way, I'm sorry. I feel like I didn't mean to trample Janelle because I don't think. What did you think of the trailer?
Oh, gosh, you're
jumped
fine
in there and cut you off. I didn't mean to.
No, I love how excited you guys are. Like, I don't have as strong of a knowledge of these characters. So, of course, like I'm going in very optimistic and I'm like, sure, let's go. The first Venom was not terrible in my opinion. Like, I enjoyed it. So I'm really excited for the next one. And I love the humor. And I think that it's really nice that they leaned into that. You can tell they did in the trailer. And I think it's going to be really good. I'm curious. And I think a lot of other people are, like Ian Grimm in the chat says, I'm so curious to see how they differentiate between the two characters on screen. I mean, besides color, because, you know, we just saw the little like things sticking out of Carnage, but like the teeth, like everything kind of looked sort of similar besides color. So I'm with you on that one. And
Well, I mean, symbiotes are symbiotes, right? So there is basically just color swaps for who they are. But I think what Ian Grimm is also referring to, and we should point out, a big amount of this hinges on how does Woody Harrelson and Carnage, like, what is their relationship about, and like, what does that voice sound like, and how does it factor into like what Cletus Kasady does? Because if that's not right in the same way that Tom Hardy nails the Venom thing, then yeah, you could have a bad villain. But I think, like Charlie said, there's nobody that gets weird quite like Woody Harrelson, from the Larry Flint movies to True Detective to everything in between that Woody Harrelson loves to get weird in.
Natural born killers.
Like, yeah, somebody on the said, Monkey Jeebus said that they're hoping that the audience sees him as Mickey from Natural Born Killers.
And great throwback. Let's not forget, like, a lot of this hinges too on Andy Serkis. You know, Andy, we all know Andy Serkis.
Which is a factor I don't think a lot of people remember in all this.
You know, I don't know if anyone else watched Mowgli. Andy Serkis is demented.
So good, yeah.
Like, there's a scene in Mowgli in the end of this movie. It's on Netflix. And it is like dark and terrifying, and it's played. It made me feel like Andy Serkis has something up his sleeve for Venom, because his mind can work in a very dark way that also knows how to kind of bring some levity to things. It Mowgli kind of sets the stage for this, and he's only done one movie as a director, so it's kind of hard to tell where he's going to go. It's not like when Jordan Peele made Get Out for his directorial debut. It's like, oh, that's now one of our defining directors for the foreseeable future. You know, Mowgli was not that for Andy Serkis, but he showed a lot. And so I think that it can go in a million different directions depending on kind of how Andy Serkis treats it.
All right, just to close out, some commenters, Matthew Anderson, Half Send Josh, what's up, are asking, do you think we're going to get a Spider-Man or other kind of bigger universe cameos in this? Andy Serkis, if you go on comicbook.com, Marvel, there is an article that Andy Serkis did an interview for right when the trailer dropped, where he basically kind of said that this Venom is still a standalone story. The characters are not aware of Spider-Man or Spider-Man's existence or anything else. But he kind of left that like with a weird, heavy open-endedness that could suggest that by the end of this movie, maybe that's not the case. Maybe this movie is the beginning of Venom getting into larger things. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's true. We already have little Easter eggs. There's a Daily Bugle from Sam Raimi's Spider-Man universe that has a page that kind of mentions the Avengers in a fight. None of this makes Venom official MCU, but like, I feel like they're going to start to open this up a little bit,
right?
You know, and tease it just enough to make sure that Venom wasn't a flash in the pan. They get two good movies, solid movies out. There's a franchise here. And then I think we'll start to see those connections come in. I think
I don't know the rules, but like, could Venom have its own Spider-Man?
I don't know. I mean, I think all of this is still up in the air, really. And like,
all the multiverse stuff, I feel like, like you said, it's very open.
Yeah, I think it depends a lot on what's going on at Marvel Studios, what happens after Doctor Strange 2, after No Way Home, and like whatever. Yeah, I don't think we're going to hear much until those films are out, and then we'll begin to hear more about like what's the next phase of this. So that's my take on all of it. That's just speculation, but I'd put a good amount of chips on that being the case.
I think if we see anything, it's going to be like Carnage at the end of the first movie, where it is a tease to a character that, as comic fans, we know, but it's not like here's Tom Holland.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We're going to keep an eye on it, and there'll probably be another trailer we'll be breaking down in the coming months as, things progress with this film. All right. That is Venom. Let There Be Carnage. Now it's time to turn up with Charlie Ridgely. Charlie, these Army of the Dead, Zack Snyder, you know, we went heavy on Zack Snyder's Justice League release. Now we're going to see Snyder jump back into the quasi-zombie genre with Army of the Dead. These reviews have come in. I think it's like 74% on Rotten Tomatoes, the initial wave. Charlie was our reviewer for comicbook.com. Charlie, the stage is yours. Give us a quick rundown of non-spoiler review. This will be non-spoilers of non-spoilers. Army of the Dead.
So I, not to be controversial, kind of wish that Zack Snyder would have spent more time with zombie movies over the years, because I think he's very good at it. Dawn of the Dead to me is still his best movie. And, Army of the Dead is a really great follow-up to that. As you know, I'm again trying not to be spoilery. It's a really exciting movie. He's got a lot of great action sequences kind of packed in there. And it's really interesting. It's something I didn't know going in. He shot this himself. He didn't have a cinematographer working with him. He was the director of cinematography for this movie. So not only did he direct it, he actually had the camera in hand shooting this film. But all of the Snyder things that you've come to know as Snyder things are packed in here. I mean, there's a lot of slow-mo shots. There's a lot of needle drops with like slow emotional covers of popular songs. There's, you know, it's entirely too long. Like, there's a lot of Snyder things.
Oh, wow.
But they work with this. It's 2.5 hours. It's a little too long. If this was like a 90-minute movie, you would not be able to breathe through it, because it is very tense. But there's a lot of times where he stays on a scene, you know, way longer than a lot of other people would. But it's indulgent and it's fun in that. You know, my problems with some of the DC stuff with him is you kind of have this seriousness to it, which I don't mind the seriousness at all. I like the seriousness, but it's kind of how you take this story of gods and men and this really, you know, how someone from this other planet, it feels too bleak for what the characters are at times. And he kind of dwells in that bleakness instead of doing something different with it, instead of changing it up and having fun with it. And what I think he does really well in Army of the Dead, and what Army of the Dead lends itself to, is taking a bleak world and a bleak story, you know, zombie outbreak in Vegas, and letting it be crazy and fun and different. And again, that's not to say that seriousness is bad, because this movie takes its subject and its world and its mythology really seriously. But when it's something like zombies, you can just kind of get wilder with it. Whereas, you know, I don't know if it's because of the nature of Superman or the fact that Superman is an existing character that you have to kind of work around what's already been in place. This is just kind of wide open, and all of Zack Snyder's tendencies that were often criticisms with the DC stuff, I think they're perfect for something like Army of the Dead. It looks gorgeous. It's a big, loud movie. But all of the characters are very interesting, and the time that he spends with them is very, very intentional. It's really cool to watch Batista. I was talking to somebody on Twitter about this. Like, Batista could have easily just kind of followed The Rock's lead and taken roles where he gets to be the big guy and just gets to, you know, beat up on dudes and say quips and be the wrestler turned movie star. And that's not to say that The Rock shouldn't have done that. The Rock's perfect in what he does. But Batista really wants to be his own actor and to grow as a performer. And he really showcases that in Army of the Dead. You know, he really has a chance to bring some depth to things and add some layers to his arsenal. And he's really fun to watch. Omari Hardwick, who I don't know. I know not everyone watching this watches Power. Omari Hardwick is an incredible actor, and he is the most fun character in this to me. I loved Omari Hardwick's character. I love Tig Notaro's character. There are some weird things with Tig Notaro where, like, you could tell they had filmed most of Chris Delia's stuff when they brought Tig Notaro in, and it's kind of evident at times, but it works. She's impeccably funny. The whole cast works well together.
You got to say that's pretty impressive.
It's very impressive.
In that much.
Absolutely.
And it still works.
It's very impressive. Yeah. You know, like, there's a scene, and they released it online, so this isn't much spoiler. It's a scene from earlier in the movie where they recruit Tig Notaro's character, and you see Dave Bautista and I can't remember the name of his character, Scott Ward. I can't remember the name. Cruz is the other character. They walk up to a fence at like this helicopter base to recruit Tig Notaro, and she's on the other side of the fence with the helicopters. And it was very clearly two different things that were shot in two different like places, but it was set up so well. Like it was obvious, but in a way that didn't bother you, you know, because they really put the care into making it work. You know, by the time you get to the third act, I think kind of drags a little bit as it gets into the final action of it. But it's really exciting throughout. And the zombie mythology that's built in here is really interesting, because it's not just a simple zombie movie. And it's not like even World War Z where they're just fast and crazy. You have some alpha zombies who are, they have control, they communicate, they have rules. They have a society kind of inside Vegas, and they control these other zombies. And I don't want to get into anything else, because there's so many more things that kind of like you get glimpses of through the movie. And there's some things that aren't answered or addressed at all. You know, that's why they kind of announced these prequel things in the anime series, because there is just so much to unpack. And I applaud Snyder for not wanting to dive into every single detail in this movie, because I think that can be his tendency sometimes. And he did a great job of kind of restraining that and saying, okay, like, let's leave this for something else. We can put hints here, and it's not one of those things where, oh, all like this important question's unanswered and I can't really appreciate this movie. It's just little details that you don't need to know to enjoy it. It's probably my favorite Snyder movie since Dawn of the Dead. I really, really like what he does with the undead and with zombies. And I think just the nature of zombies being serious and deadly, but also like being kind of a ridiculous concept when you think about it, is a great thing for Zack Snyder. It's a great thing to bring his tendencies and his vision to life, because it has the best of both worlds. So, I mean, I highly encourage watching Army of the Dead. It comes out in theaters a week before Netflix. So like if there's a theater around you that's playing it and it's safe or you're vaccinated or whatever, like this is going to be a fun movie to watch on a really big screen. I mean, I watched it on my TV in my living room and that didn't feel big enough. So if you have a chance to see it in the theater, I would suggest that, just because it is so big and so fun. The zombie tiger's cool. It's hard to really dive into without talking about spoilers, but I have a whole review.
What the hell are you talking about? You've dived all over this thing.
I feel like I'm saying the same kind of stuff over and over again.
You feel like you're just giving a preamble here?
I feel like I'm going in circles.
No, it's good. It's good. For anyone who hasn't read the review, we actually have a question. Is it better than the Snyder Cut? Asks Alex Cosman.
Oh, boy. Don't get.
I mean, Kofi, I don't think it's
we're going to break it in Snyder
Cut. I liked it. It wasn't my favorite thing, but I enjoyed it. I like this better. This is something I actively like. I'm really into, and part of it was just my disconnection with after everything. Like, I wanted the Snyder Cut to exist. I'm glad it exists, you know, for Zach, because I think he earned that. I'm never gonna like be fully in love with a 4-hour movie.
That comment is amazing, by the way.
I think Army of the Dead is
so. There you have it. We're gonna cut them off here.
JD Smith, digital artist, has a great.
Charlie, drink some water after that monologue. There you go.
Y'all told me to talk.
I did. You did, but I'm just amazed that you're like, I feel
it
like
was
not
beautiful.
Oh
my God. All right. We got your back, Charlie.
It, that's Charlie. Charlie. Right. Charlie likes Army of the Dead. He thinks it's the best thing Snyder's done since Dawn of the Dead. And he likes Zack Snyder back.
More Zack Snyder zombie movies.
All right. There you have it. And no, it's not a sequel. It's a standalone thing. Somebody asked, Chase DuVernay asked, is it a sequel?
There will be prequels, though.
Yes, they're going to have an anime prequel and stuff like that.
Well, and there's a prequel movie that Matthias Schwarzfinger, the guy who plays the safecracker in the movie, he is in the prequel. And Natalie Emmanuel from Game of Thrones and Fast and Furious,
she's in the
prequel movie too.
And our buddy Joe's in it, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. So there's a bunch of people in the prequel.
Manganiello is in it. Yeah. So
yeah.
But Matthias directed the prequel, not Snyder. Which I didn't know, but they already shot it and it's done, at least done, you know, principal photography. But there's a lot of things that will be interesting to talk about when it comes out, because of the little hints that I would love to talk about right now, but I won't. Like little things, you know, you're like, wait, that's its own thing, and it's completely unaddressed.
Earth. Universe setup. That's what
there's a lot. There's a lot to dig into.
All right, cool. That'll do it for our Army of the Dead review. Thank you, Charlie. That comes out this Friday on Netflix.
No, so this Friday in theaters, May 14th. Okay. May 21st on Netflix.
Okay, so this Friday on theaters, next Friday Netflix. That's a good strategy. All right, we're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we are going to have a surprise guest hop on and Stop it. The comments are just all just lit up today. Man, you guys are on one today. Yes, we are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have somebody jump on and give us a early review of Spiral from the Book of Saul. So don't miss that.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I seriously wonder if that music will ever stop scaring me when we came back. Yeah. Every time we come back, I'm like, I take a quick break. I look down and then music just freaks me out.
Push my headphones on because I'm not connected at all.
Oh, man. Yeah. Rich knows how to get our attention. Rich, thank you. Well, back to our show. Let's bring on a special guest for our Spiral review from the comic book editorial staff and our horror expert, Mr. Patrick the Wolfman Cavanaugh is with us.
Patrick!
Everybody! Hi, thanks for having me. I'm not that special, but thank you for the introduction.
It's a nice surprise. I didn't read the show notes because I didn't want to spoil myself, so I didn't know you were coming.
Anybody on this?
Charlie didn't read something?
Oh, it was purposeful. I wanted to be surprised.
Boy, the shots just keep coming for Charlie.
I wanted to be surprised. I'm a writer, not a reader, Pat.
Yeah, I mean, anybody on this staff who has survived this long is special. So Patrick's, been here with us for a minute. It's been a long break since we've had you back on the show, man. So it's good to have you back. And you're here to give us a quick spoiler-free early review of Spiral from the Book of Saul. First, let's get some background. Patrick, how well-versed are you in this? Did you stay through all the Saul madness, all the way through all the 7 films and then the reboot?
Yeah. I think I checked on our own site to find that I ranked every Saw ahead of Jigsaw. So that was 2017. So when I watched them all then, I realized I never need to watch all of them ever again. I'm familiar with them, but they're not necessarily something you need to go back to year after year to be like, oh, was the car trap with the guy from Linkin Park getting his skin ripped off in 4, or was it actually 6, or was it 3? It doesn't matter.
That's the most accurate kind of description of the Saw franchise I've heard, of the late Saw franchise. Because, yeah, I mean, I just go back and read the wikis. I think I tapped out after 4. And that last half about the disciple and all that stuff, yeah, I tapped out. I came back for Jigsaw, which was interesting until it wasn't, because it was just like a weird prequel tease. But I am curious about this. So is Spiral from the Book of Saul the thing needed to kind of give this franchise a shot in the arm, or is it going to be another flash in the pan like Jigsaw?
Well, there's a lot of interesting things going on, because this is from the Book of Saw, but it's also from the mind of Chris Rock. Like, he met with the head of Lionsgate at a wedding. I was like, you know, I really think the Saw movies are great, but they could use some jokes. Like, why don't they have any jokes in them? And so from that, it ended up being that Chris Rock, like, spearheaded this whole movie. He didn't write it, but he was the executive producer, starred in it. So I think everybody was really confused and concerned, but excited about, like, is he just going to do a parody of Saw? Like, is he going to make fun of the franchise? Like, what is it going to be? And it ended up being, no, it was, it's like 48 hours. It's like Lethal Weapon. It's like a buddy cop detective comedy. Not too much comedy, but it's a buddy cop murder mystery. And so, of course, Chris Rock is there and he is hilarious. But he clearly has very much, he has a lot of respect for the franchise. And that is very clear that that's like the motivating factor of this movie.
Okay, so what would you say are, is there anything notably novel or besides the humor or different about the actual Saw-ness of it all? Or is it pretty much the same package, you know what you're going to get? Kind of like McDonald's.
It is very much like McDonald's, except it's not so much a Happy Meal and you're probably not going to enjoy the prize you get. But no, I would say like the first hour.
Definitely. Thank you for carrying that analogy much further.
Impressive.
It very much feels more like something along the lines of Seven. Like the first, say, hour is just this murder mystery and you have these gruesome traps. As any Saw fan will tell you, everyone is going to be unsettled and grossed out by a very specific and different trap. So even if you don't like Saw 3, there might be something in there that just like really gets under your skin. So it's going to be the same thing with this. One big difference with the traps in this is it doesn't feel like there was someone with an engineering degree who was responsible for creating them. Like they're definitely a little bit more rudimentary, a little bit more grounded, a little bit more believable that a, you know, sadistic killer could whip this up in a few hours as opposed to spending years and working with NASA to actually pull off. but for as enjoyable as that first hour is, I would say one of the traps, if you will, that the movie falls into is like, Saw has taught you to never believe anything you're seeing because you never know who the killer is going to be, who's really dead, who's really alive, what timeline you're in. So there's all of these shocking twists that you're expecting. So then when you get to the back half and there are shocking twists, you're not as surprised by them. It doesn't feel as fulfilling to watch that magic trick pulled off because you've seen it coming, just knowing that it is Spiral from the Book of Saw.
Saw has been Shyamalan'd, if you will.
Yeah.
Saw's been Shyamalan for a while.
Yeah, it's, and that's the thing is, it's probably from like the second movie, like what James Wan and Lee Whannell did with the very first movie, it still holds up. Like it's still super inventive. It was an indie movie. It, you know, came out of nowhere. And then both James Wan and Lee Whannell, like Invisible Man, Aquaman, Furious 7, like The Conjuring, Insidious, like they have defined the horror genre for the past two decades, basically. So it's cool to see that original movie and see the nuggets of that ambition. And this movie was directed by Darren Lynn Bousman, who directed Saw 2, 3, and 4. And he does what he can. He takes it out of the darkness. He takes it out of the warehouse, out of the industrial basement. Like, there's daytime scenes. There's people driving cars and having conversations. Like, it's not this, like, a miserable experience full of just killing time to get to brutal eviscerations or anything. So it is mostly enjoyable. And I think longtime fans will appreciate the way they bring a fresh perspective while honoring the past. Whereas people like me who aren't devout Saw fans will probably just enjoy the first half of the movie.
I was muted. All right. Well, all right. That's a pretty interesting synopsis. Sounds like kind of a mixed bag. Would you rate this? My final question is, would you rate this over or under Jigsaw?
For me, what it comes down to is there's Saw, there's Spiral, and then everything down here is just a roll of the dice. It's nice. All the same. It's all interchangeable. I don't care. It's it's like ranking, you know, letters of the alphabet. You know, it's
like, Nicholas Case would say, high praise. That's high praise.
Exactly. Just in the words of Nicolas Cage. Yes. But I mean, it's I would say Spiral obviously is a big ticket movie for horror fans that's coming out. I do, however, want to plug next week, if you're looking for something a little off the radar, a little more obscure, that you should check out Seance, which is coming out on VOD next week. And that's from the writer of Your Next and The Guest. And it's a really fun, like, murder mystery haunted house at a boarding school that I think people should definitely check out. If you're deciding between Spiral or something on TV, do that. Seance.
All right. Well, Patrick, thanks a lot for breaking that down and giving us some good context and perspective on Spiral, the Book of Saw, and how it fits with the Saw franchise and that whole experience. We appreciate that, man.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
All right. So, moving right along, that was Patrick. He had no interest in talking about the rest of the stuff we're going to discuss today.
He was just gone.
Yeah. He just came in. He popped in for that cameo. We have twists and cameos in this show now. So, moving right along, we are now going to get into Jupiter's Legacy, the new Netflix series based on Mark Millar's series. Mark Millar, who wrote Kingsman and Kick-Ass, and what's the other big thing that we've done? What's up?
He wrote Civil War.
Civil, you know, the original Marvel Civil War. Yeah. Jupiter's Legacy. And I think this one is interesting, and we're going to talk spoilers about this. I've seen the first four episodes. Matt's seen five. Janelle's seen maybe four or five, I think.
I actually finished the whole thing.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Yeah.
And Charlie, have you seen it all?
Oh, I quit after the first one. No way.
Wow. Okay. This is going to get good. All right. So Jupiter's Legacy, when we did the trailer, we discussed this briefly and we were all kind of like, it wasn't bad, but we felt like we've seen this before, right? Like we saw Heroes and, you know, this wasn't quite The Boys or something like that. And we were kind of just like, you know, and it came out and it was in the same kind of time when Invincible was being hyped and we were like, this feels like a retread without being very interesting. I'll start by saying, since I had those low expectations, and like I said, we're going to talk spoilers for Jupiter's Legacy. Since we had those low expectations going in, I was actually a little pleasantly surprised by this series. I don't think it's like the greatest thing ever, but I was pleasantly surprised by the level of intrigue it was created. I did not read the comic series. I am not like the biggest Mark Millar fan. So I kind of jumped off his work about the same time I jumped off of Frank Miller's work years ago. It has enough intrigue in the first four episodes and good enough characters that it's carrying me more as like a mystery drama than a superhero show. But it's enough to keep me going because I like the way the story's told. And then there's these flashbacks about, you know, if you haven't checked it out, it's about this. It's basically about Superman, this guy named the Utopian. And now he has a family. He has a super wife. He has two super kids. And he's this kind of ideal superhero with a code and all this stuff. But the world is changing. Villains are getting crazier. His kids are struggling to find their place in his shadow. And that's kind of the modern story. And then there's this flashback story to the events of how the Utopian and his family kind of got their powers and the mystery of that. And that's what's kind of propelling season one. And this show does a good job. Netflix has a whole venture with Mark Millar. They're building this whole Millar world. And I feel like the show also does a good job, almost like HBO's Watchmen, not as insightful or serious, but does a good job in the world building is interesting. There's a bunch of side characters, a whole kind of celebrity superhero generation that are like the bratty kids of Hollywood, you know, these other kind of villains and stuff that feel like they're all going towards a larger purpose in some really great kind of side characters from just common street crooks to, you know, yeah, different people in the flashbacks. And there's a whole world here, it feels like. And it has been able to successfully pull me in. How about you guys? Janelle, let's start with you because you...
Finish the whole dang thing.
Yeah, finish the whole dang thing. Don't spoil it for me and Matt, but...
Okay. I won't spoil. I will just give my opinion. I thought it was going to be way more wholesome. I really thought it was going to be kind of like a little like lighter on, you know, topics. And I'm trying not to spoil. Actually, Charlie, this is really hard to not spoil. But I was actually pleasantly surprised. It is a little heavier than I expected.
We have a spoiler warning on the thing. You can.
I know. As Jim, I guess you don't want
to ruin it for them. I mean,
okay.
Just don't spoil the ending for me and Matt because we're watching.
I think that for me, it is extremely interesting in the flashbacks. I'm very dedicated to the backstory of how they got their powers. That is what kept me coming back. I didn't really care about the now. And I didn't really care about the family dynamic and the sister. She's off doing whatever she's doing. I just didn't really care. But the flashback and how they got through like the Great Depression and, you know, the visions that he was having and that lead role. And it was done really well, I think. And I will say the first episode did not suck me in because I didn't have enough of those flashbacks. By the second episode, I got more of that, you know, from the past. And it was really exciting to watch that kind of unfold because I was just curious, like how, and my only criticism is that they just talk about the code so redundantly. It's just like, it's just, if you're binge watching this show, it's the code. And it's just kind of like, okay, just get back to the story of like how you got your powers and, you know, why the word Jupiter is in the title. Like that's pretty much, and I enjoyed it. I really did. I'm probably going to rewatch it again with more of a critical eye because my fiance didn't get to watch it and I binged it and he really wants to check it out. So I will definitely go in.
Oh, I feel sorry for you, Janelle.
I really liked it, but I also really like a couple of those actors a lot. So I like just seeing them in general. But yeah, it wasn't terrible.
I'm going to say the real hook with me was I liked the fight in the first episode. That's where they fight the kind of Hulk or Darkseid.
They fight against not Darkseid?
Yeah. I liked that, actually. That kind of turned me on to... Okay, this show actually will have action chops in it and violence. Like, whoa, like, you know, this will get heavy with the violence. But it was where I realized that I was most interested in what is essentially a knockoff Batman Superman story that really kind of hooked me. Is because the Utopian Superman, and there is a character who they reference in the first thing lightly, but as the flashbacks go on, if you are a comic book fan, you begin to realize like, oh, okay, like this dude's Bruce Wayne and like, you know, in this universe and is going to become Batman.
The guy in the first episode that he ran into outside of the bank before the stock market fell apart.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that,
like, I know that face. He's got a bigger role George, coming. Right?
You're talking about.
George. Yeah. 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 And I was like, okay, now this is interesting. And just seeing that whole kind of Batman Superman dynamic and knowing that where it's going to lead because they tease it is also what's kind of keeping me hooked through these episodes. Secondly, I don't know his name, but my boy with the teleporting wand is like,
oh yeah, he's great.
Every time he's on screen. Show. Yeah. Like I'm like, yeah, I think his name is Hutch.
Yeah. He was great.
Yeah.
George's kid.
I loved that actor too.
And that was the reveal we just got like at the end of episode 3 or 4 is like, oh, he really is tied into all of this. And he has a teleporting stick in the ways that he just, cause he seems like he's a low level threat in the beginning. And like, he has all these heavy people. And then there's just this great episode in this turnaround scene where he just like calmly demonstrates that like, no, I'm one of the most powerful people in this whole get up and you're like, whoa. And he's a great actor. And
well, and if you like him, you're going to absolutely love episode 5.
Oh, awesome. I hope it is.
There's so much delight. So, okay. So two things. One, because I saw Jim reference it in the chat. When they announced, like when Millar did this whole deal, there are several books
that I was pulling for to be made, and one of them is being made now ahead of Jupiter's Legacy. So like the Magic Order, which is like one of my favorite series, is being developed for Netflix. That's the one I really want. I also really want Prodigy. Both of those series are fantastic, and that is Millar at his best. So if you do want to read those series, like, I suggest you go get those now, because those are fantastic, and those will be coming to Netflix at some point. So that was one of the things when like this was announced, I was like, oh, they're starting with that one. That's the one I'm least interested in. And then after that dud of a trailer, I was not very high. I was not very high on the series. But what I will say is, I think, man, probably because the bar was low, because I came in without huge expectations. The first episode is a bit of a grind, but probably by like right, maybe past the 75% mark through that episode, I was in. Like, I wouldn't say it's like it was, you know, I have to watch it right now, you know, that kind of thing. But I was like, I want to keep going. I want to learn more about these characters. I want to learn more about this world. And to me, honestly, this is one of the shows that really benefits from binging. I can, if this was a weekly release, I would probably have dropped it just because other stuff comes in or whatever. Binging, I feel, helps.
The DVR for sure.
Binging helps this because I went right into the next one. The second episode is what really hooked me. And I've been watching these pretty, back to back to back, as life permits. And I'm glad that like I can go finish, like I'm on the final episode. I'm glad I can go finish and really like the show has hooked me, and it has issues. Like there's the way, and mine actually aren't with most of the storytelling. Mine isn't really with the pacing. My issues are more with like the way things are shot. It's weird. Like we're so used to superhero action being so fluid now, and so feels like it jumped right out of the comic, that here it's so weird to like see them it hover so and like awkward. They approach the ground, and it's like, that looks so awkward. Why does that look awkward? Why does the, when they throw a punch or when they get ready to throw a punch, everything is like, it's like 2000s superhero stuff where it was like kind of waiting for things to catch up. You know, the tech wasn't quite there. The wire work wasn't there. It's weird how the fights still have that kind of feel to them where we are now. And they put a lot of money into this. So, you know, like it's shot well, looks nice. Like there's money, right? So I'm kind of like, why is that the case? So that always kind of takes me out sometimes of the middle of really thrilling fights where it just looks, it looks off. But as far as the narrative, when they really start planting the, you know, how Utopian and how the rest of the group got their powers and the quest to go find them, you know, as things turn out, right? That stuff and like the issues with his dad and like seeing his dead father, you know, like in his video, all that stuff is really good. I really enjoyed it. And especially as we get further into the series, the stuff with him and George, you know, like that stuff and that relationship and seeing where, how that started and seeing how it got to the end and seeing where, you know, his son, how Hutch kind of plays into it. I agree. I think I think Utopian probably can stand right there with Reed Richards and Xavier as like worst superhero dad. It's terrible. He's always saying the wrong thing. And I did love though, there's a reveal. I think it was in episode 5, but if it was episode 4, I don't want to say if it's in episode 5 because I want to spoil things. But essentially there's a reveal of like who Utopian is talking to, and that was really interesting. Like there's a lot of really cool swerves in this. And
swerve in last episode too, and it's rewarding.
Okay. So like
you're like, oh, okay, now I need to know what's gonna happen next.
I think they do that really, really well. Like by the end of each episode, I was like, yeah, I gotta watch the next one. They do a really good job of that. I agree that the kids and like their issues with the dad and like the code, but the code gets addressed in a really cool way in, I believe, episode 5. So like, again, most of the stuff that was either annoying me or kind of, you know, I was unsure about ended up getting resolved or at least addressed in some way that was satisfying to me. So I really dig this series, and I'm excited to finish it. I did not see this coming. I would not say this is Batman Fortnite levels of like, oh my God, it's so good. How the hell is it this good? But I will say, like, I'm really intrigued. And like, if they do a season 2, I'm in. I'm probably in. unless the finale just blows me somewhere where I'm definitely in for
season two, just with how they left it, for sure. Yeah.
The Magic Order, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. So there you have it. Jupiter's Legacy. Charlie, you said you didn't make it past episode one. Just come on.
I've been told by everybody it gets better in the latter half of the season. I don't have time for that. The writing is bad. It is a dull looking thing, which is so frustrating because the best thing about the comic is Frank Quitely's art. And they didn't bother to bring over like any sense of his style or color or possess, like none of that made it to the show. What is that awful beard? It's so fake and terrible. Even in the flashbacks, like there's like mid flashbacks, we just kind of have some gray hair. Like it all looks bad. There's a scene in the first episode where Josh Duhamel's father jumps off a building, and I have not laughed so hard in years. The way that he screams, it was so absurdly overacted and terribly written. I'll be right down. And it was one of the pilots I've had the hardest time watching. Like everything in it was just another reason for me to not keep watching it.
I will say it was bad. Is the best part of that, though.
Mark Miller is
Frank Quitely is the best part of anything.
I don't like how
Mark Miller tells a story. He's one of the best idea people in comics, but execution wise, he always has these grand ideas and never exactly knows how.
Oh, that's so untrue.
I disagree. Yeah. I think that Matthew Vaughn has done us all a giant disservice by making Mark Millar look good. Well, Kick-Ass and Kingsman were great movies. And because of that, Mark Millar got a big Netflix deal that I don't think is going to turn out quite well over the years because Matthew Vaughn is not making the stuff.
That is it so just, reductionist.
Magic
this is what people come to this podcast for.
First arcs of Kick-Ass are great. I love the original Civil War. I will also say, like, there's.
I think Civil War is pretty good. I think Civil War is pretty good. I'll be with you there. And the Kick-Ass comic isn't bad.
We just want Nemesis.
Nemesis is great too. That's what we're here for. But yeah, Nemesis is fantastic. Like, I'm sorry, like his comic work, it cannot be reduced to just like, oh, it's just great ideas. Like there are. He does have duds. Don't get me wrong, but like that's too far to me.
No, Mark Miller has like Kofi said, he has had a very Frank Miller-esque career where it's like, oh, you had a good thing. And then you just got with the ideas and you got too far in them. And now you don't know what to do with them. And it just isn't coming across the way you think it is. And it all kind of feels lackluster for the last 15 years. And it doesn't work for me. Most of what he has written, I mean, Reborn started off so good. Were the first like three or four issues of Reborn that he made with,
I love Reborn.
What was the artist?
So it's Capullo.
Capullo. Yeah. It was fantastic. And the first three, and then the end is trash. It has one of the worst endings.
Okay. Well, we could be on this all day, so we are not, we could have,
it started great. It started garbage.
It's not trash. Great. Also. Yes, Jim. I don't like his artwork. I never have. And we disagree on JR too. And I don't like his artwork either.
Yeah. No, I don't think I've ever heard somebody say, I got to go back to that Frank Quitely book and just take in the visuals again. Like, no, I mean, it makes me.
I can't be taken seriously because I have toys on my shelf.
Yeah. That was a hilarious comment, by the way, about the toy on your
shelf. I love Jim. Jim's all caps reactions are amazing, by the way. Oh, good Lord.
All right. Well, we're going to not settle this here. But Jupiter's Legacy, I think the consensus is if you can make it to episode two and you can get in, it starts to kind of pick up a little bit. But still, I mean, I think our original statement still holds true. This may be too middling to really kind of get the purchase it needs, right? Like it just feels like it's going to be here. Some people will enjoy it and then it'll be gone and without much hype. Whereas it's going to get lost behind Invincible, The Boys, these other superhero series that are out here for us. So I'm going to finish it because, like I said, I've been enjoying what I see. But, yeah, I'm going to be interested to see how this Millar thing unfolds. All right. Now that we've already started throwing grenades about comics, Matt, we might as well get into this week's books.
Yeah. So I'm going to let's stay on. Let's go with DC. I'm going to change this out because I know Janelle is a big Future State fan. So we are going to be talking about Future State Gotham, which, of course, is a series that spins out of I was kind of expecting more short stories. It's actually just mostly one longer story about the Red Hood. So if you were keeping tabs on Red Hood during Future State and what he was doing and how he's kind of working with the magistrate by hunting other vigilantes, that's where we pick up from here. There's not a ton of like recap here. So like to me, like if you weren't reading Future State, you're probably going to be like completely lost of like what's going on. They do a little bit of recap, but not a ton to give you kind of the context here. But it's also all black and white. And that actually surprised me because, again, like the covers, it's like all in color and they didn't really go out of their way. Typically, DC goes out of their way to kind of and Marvel, too. To kind of spotlight like, hey, this is going to be, you know, like a very like kind of throwback black and white book. And they didn't really do that here. So, again, a couple different expectations turned upside down when reading this. But it's just continuing his story. So, I mean, you find like they address Ravager and him and things that have happened there. You also kind of see why he's working with the magistrate. You don't necessarily get all the answers yet. And then that kind of final page hook is to, I guess, kind of bring some of those to light next month. So that's kind of the recap of the issue. I mean, it wasn't what I was expecting. I'm not going to lie. So kind of going into it, I was excited because I really like what they did with Gotham and Batman, the Batman world in general and Future State. And I was a little let down. And the second story that's in there is really in no way related to much of anything. So that one was also like, I would have rather have gotten another backup story set in the Future State world about, you know, Oracle or about Cassandra or Stephanie, like someone else that was in that world. But, you know, who knows? So, Janelle, what did you think?
I hate being neutral. I hate not having like a really big opinion, but it was okay. It was there.
Right.
I didn't hate the black and white at all. I understood what was going on. I followed. I guess it's a first issue, right? So it's supposed to suck me in. Is that what we've discussed? I'm intrigued, but I'm not super pumped. I'm not like, I got to read everything on this, but you know, I'm neutral on it. I'm glad I read it, but if I hadn't, it's okay. You know, but yeah, it's pretty good. Yes. Hand up, Charlie. Yes. Yes.
We just some breaking news came across. I know we sometimes do this. The next person was cast in Knives Out 2, joining Dave Bautista and Ed Norton and Daniel Craig. And it's Janelle Monáe.
Hey,
Reynolds,
unite. Man, this is going to be a weird film, man.
That's going to be amazing.
Weird.
Sorry. Weird.
That's amazing. I'm actually pumped about that.
That's great. Janelle Monáe is awesome in it.
The cast just keeps getting better, man.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway.
No, that's it. That's my show. Yeah,
Kofi, what'd you think?
Matt, did you touch on like why this book has no like color in it? It was just like DC's leftovers.
I actually don't know. I don't actually know why it does it, because that was my thing. I don't dislike it. We've talked about some of the anthologies like Batman Black and White, obviously, and some other things that like I like it. But typically, again, like I know ahead of time, like I know going into the issue what I'm getting. So here was just kind of a surprise. Maybe I missed the announcement or maybe I missed the thing of like, hey, why this is that way. I don't know. Did you pick up on something of why, or was that just
I felt like this was like Future State leftovers. They were just like, we did some work on it. Get it out there.
We moved past
this whole thing, but get it out there. We'll see what we get. I've been interested, I think, of Future State, that whole thing, the Batman world was the most interesting part of it. And it's still relevant because the main Batman books are starting to build that up and we're actually heading towards that Future State. event that we read about the magistrate and the peacekeepers and all that stuff. And so this stuff is still relevant, and I could see why they would put it out just to give you an expanded preview of like where Red Hood is going and, you know, what's going to happen in these once the magistrate really becomes a thing. So I read it and I like Jason Todd's character. I still don't think this is anything new for him. This whole like undercover thing is like, okay, this is obvious. He's still just Jason Todd. And he's still going to be somewhat semi-conflicted with the Batman family and still kind of doing his own thing. So there's nothing really new here. I really would like to find something new for this character. For the brief moment, I thought like, oh man, he really is a peacekeeper. Like that was interesting. Like if Jason was really hunting the Batman family, like that would be interesting to me. So this is not quite, they still, I don't think DC, I think Red Hood is the Boba Fett of the DC universe. Like he looks real cool. He's iconic. His story is kind of iconic, but what to do with him actually in the storytelling is still difficult and escapes DC in large part. I mean, we saw what happened in the Three Jokers thing when they tried to include him and it just got weird with Batgirl, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And that was like the most relevant Red Hood story in the past few years because of his past with Joker and all that stuff. But yeah, I feel like they don't know quite what to do with him, but I would love to see a story where that stops being like an undercover thing. And he actually, whether it's, you know, through coercion and brainwashing or just for some legitimate organic character development reason, is really the guy hunting the Batman family, because that adds an element of danger and, you know, he'd be really formidable in that way. So
agreed. No, agreed for sure. And I feel the same way on that character. It feels like they don't want to go one extreme or the other, because they don't want to go too far one way because they want to make him redeemable, right? They want to make him that, they don't want to alienate people from him either way, but you kind of have to. Like they learned with Hal Jordan, to get any movement, they have to alienate some people to push the character into interesting directions. So next we're going to talk Marvel, book I was very excited for. X-Corp is the number one, is the brand new addition to the X-Men, the growing X-Men universe. You can check out my full long-winded review on comicbook.com, so I won't take up too much time here, but essentially this puts Warren Worthington III, Angel, and Monet St. Croix, M, or Penance now, as she is called, and they are essentially, for those who kind of remember the X Corporation from back in the day, this is kind of taking that same concept, but very much It makes a lot of sense with the way this kind of post-Krakoa society is with the X-Men. It fits, right? They're not just branching into pharmaceuticals, but they're also branching into trade with like the Hellfire Club. And here it's kind of like, well, here's all these other business ventures that we can kind of influence and push into, and also further the goals that we have. And so they are kind of going to be leading this charge. And there's going to be some other people that get Trinary and Multiple Man as well, who Multiple Man steals the show a lot in all of his scenes. I just love these books that kind of play with, I described it as kind of taking a little bit of like West Wing, the walk and talks that they do are fantastic. And then taking a little bit of like Billions and some of the corporate, you know, drama and intrigue there, kind of going to all these different countries. There's an international feel here. That's really interesting. And it's something that Marauders does with all the political intrigue and stuff. And it balances with like big action. And here it's kind of going for the same thing. So I think it got off to a really fun start. I really dug it. You know, what did you guys think?
I'll go first. I'm really interested to see where it's going. I don't have the biggest background in X-Men. We all know this, but I didn't feel totally clueless. And I actually really enjoyed this book. I'm super interested in Angel, this character that I don't know a lot about. And I think they did a good job of being really intriguing here. I love the like bold coloring and the art. And I'm excited about this. This might be one of my first like X-Men that I'm really pumped about. Yeah.
Yay! We got Janelle on an X-book. Ironically, X-Corp and Way of X are the two that like we got Janelle. I did not see that coming. Kofi, what'd you think?
Marauders is 8. I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum here. I thought this was boring as hell. Like, this new X-Men world, I know there's a lot to build, and kind of the nature of their setup of having their mutant nation of Krakoa actually be its own real sovereign nation with all the kind of political, social, and, you know, economic impacts that come with it. And this is dealing with one aspect of that, which is, you know, the public image, the economic part, and kind of, you know, what it says. It's a mutant corporation, right? Using these two very affluent, and this was the hook that I thought was the most interesting thing, was putting these two affluent characters together, Monet and Warren Worthington, who come from, you know, the uppercase of society in their respective societies before, you know, all this mutant stuff. It was a talkie. Like, it was very much a talkie. Like you said, it was very West Wing Sorkin with kind of quippy conversations and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I found it really kind of just ultimately boring and kind of a slog to get through as a first issue. And I it doesn't sustain me on, like, what is the actual appeal of having this book month to month. Like, and I don't think it yet has enough of a unique, quirky identity to kind of compete. Like, that's Marauders. Like, Marauders made a whole issue of just saying goodbye to Storm into this quirky, awesome conversation and flashback and Storm anthology story built around how many knives does she have hidden on her person. Like, Marauders does this stuff that's like, wow, I've never seen an X-Men comic do this. And it fleshes out the actual world in minute details of this new Krakoa House of X era, but it does it in a much more interesting way. This doesn't feel like it's as interesting. Like, for a mutant corporation, seems kind of cut and dry and kind of boring so far. And Monet has always been kind of a weird fall flat character for me.
Oh, okay. That also makes sense then.
Yeah. And I'm not digging the werewolf thing. Like, this is Wolfsbane territory with her and Penance, and like, it's not as good as Hulk. It's not as good as Wolfsbane. And it's like, that's not Monet I want to see. I want to see Monet step up and be more like Emma Frost, and like, more like, I'm a badass, like, uppercase, wealthy, elite, you know, and a mutant and like a beauty queen, but I'm also a monster, like, you know, and embrace all that and see her kind of move and shake things in the corporate world. Like, X Corp coming in and just, you know, muscling in corporate world and be like, nah, we're doing things differently. Like, that would be interesting to me, and kind of taking on. And I don't feel like the book doesn't quite have the teeth in that way that it could have yet.
No, I totally, I get that. I like the Monet stuff that she, you know, was dealing with, because like in previous stories with her, right, we kind of saw that slow change over to like having some of those abilities and kind of moving over to where she couldn't control certain things, or they were kind of bringing other elements to her character other than just, which I adore Emma Frost. She's one of my favorite characters, but I also don't want Monet to be like Diet Emma Frost, right? I want her to like have some other, I thought this was interesting. I want to see what they do with it going forward. It is a talkie. Like, there's not nearly as much action in this as there would be in like a Marauders book, but I also think we can get there. And I think at some point we can kind of have those moments of just like, this issue was literally a Seinfeld episode about nothing, right? It was about one person. It felt like a
lead up for sure.
Right.
But it helped me understand what was happening for sure.
Agreed. So that's the side of the X-Men world. There were a couple other books. You can check out all of our reviews on comicbook.com, but that's comics.
All right. That's the end of our main show. Before we get out of here, I just want to do some quick mentions. I'm going to talk. Me and Charlie have been talking in our own side chat for the past couple of weeks about Mayans, the Sons of Anarchy spinoff, just completed season 3. And I've said it to Charlie before. I think he's finally started to come around to me. I enjoy Mayans more than Sons of Anarchy. And I love Sons of Anarchy. I was a big fan of that. But I think Mayans, I think Kurt Sutter has begun to grow more as a storyteller, and in kind of developing this as like a weird sequel series to Sons, has a lot more to say and does a lot more thematically with this series and the characters and the complexity of the men in this gang than Sons was. And this season has been great. And I was kind of wondering how they would deal with like the pandemic and, you know, the political, social, political reality of things. And they did a great job of not letting that stuff and being heavy-handed about it, but using that backdrop to kind of organically push these characters into a more desperate situation and world.
It all feels very real and very grounded in at least the, you know, how they like the stuff, like it's a border town. So everything dealing with the border and with immigration and, you know, how that has been handled over the past few years, like it all is very real in this world, and not in a way like Kofi said, doesn't feel heavy handed. It is just, it's very real for these characters because it's the life they've always lived in, dealing with things they've always dealt with, but now with a much more heightened, you know, sense of panic and danger, you know, with it being so prevalent.
So, yeah, I mean, and Mayans, I'm in the middle of going through the last episode now. Charlie's seen it, but yeah, the penultimate episode was, woo, that was some pretty intense TV. Yeah,
one of the harder of both shows, one of the harder episodes to watch. I mean, I've been behind about other things to watch, and I watched most of season three yesterday. I think I watched like 7 hours of Mayans last night. And I do not recommend that. This show is very painful. It is I recommend the show very, very much, but like this season especially is sorrow and dealing with the consequences of your actions and the choices of people that came before you. And it's just, there's times when it just feels helpless, and that's frustrating, but also like that's a reality for a lot of people, and it really kind of drives that home. And I think that this show, pound for pound through three seasons, is much better than Sons was through three seasons. You know, this, it did have the added, you know, benefit of coming after Sons, but it also, like Kofi said, it really is dealing with the complexity of these characters in ways that Sons had so much focus on one or two characters, and then a little bit with all these other guys, whereas this really dives into each of the characters and gives them like their own time. I mean, there's a character named Taz or Taza, who had almost nothing going on the first two seasons, and now he's like a main character. Coco is dealing with, like, it deals with addiction. It deals with, you know, with PTSD really heavily with Easy. Danu, the plug, the pug. It's on Hulu. Every episode of the whole series is on Hulu to watch. You're asking where to stream it there in the comments. It is a heavy show, but it is really good. I really think that, you know, Kurt Sutter left ahead of season three, and I think that you can see the differences. I think what he was doing with the show was excellent, but you can see the differences in Elgin James, the showrunner, really taking it as his own, and making it like more about those guys. It just, whew.
Quick mentions. Here we go. So Mayans, watch Mayans. There we go. On the other side, I just want to plug, we're getting a new Dragon Ball Super movie. Finally, Dragon Ball Super is moving. We're getting a new movie in 2022. It's going to be original. They're going to do more reinvention. Will we ever get a series again? I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, so that was it for my quick mentions. Matt, you had a couple things you wanted to mention.
Yeah. So not too Hollywood. Aha. See, I follow people. I did it. Quick mentions, real quick.
You did it in front of a camera, Hollywood.
Assassin's Creed Valhalla has its first expansion, Wrath of the Druids. You will see my full impressions and review of the new content later today. So check the site for that. But you know, we head to Ireland, and I'm not going to do an Irish accent because I would not put that on everybody. So, but I will say, we head to Ireland. There's some cool, some new mechanics and some new things introduced into the game. Also, Lycans, oh man, that's awesome. Like, there's some really cool stuff that's in there. But again, it's also more of Assassin's Creed Valhalla. So if you didn't like that game, I don't know if this will win you over. And then next, Hood Outlaws and Legends is the new 4v4 Robin Hood style game, where you're picking different classes and you're trying to get to the vault and get the treasure, and you're like having to pickpocket the Sheriff of Nottingham. It does not, kind of like we talked about with Outriders, it does not make the best first impression. There was some of that. I can't get through the opening screen. I can't get a match to start. I had to restart the tutorial because literally in the middle of the tutorial, the first thing you interact with was like, nope, error. And I was like, oh my God, I can't do this. But after several matches now, it does hook you. There's a really interesting loop there. So you can see my impressions on that game probably sometime this week. So we kind of got stuff late on that one. So I'm trying to work my way through it as fast as possible. So that's quick impressions for that.
All right. Thanks, Matt. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. We want to thank you guys for tuning in. As always, we put up new episodes every Wednesday live on Twitch, Facebook, and YouTube at 12 noon. If you like the show, you can watch us there. If you miss the show, you can replay on any of those platforms after we're done, or listen on streaming or download the episode audio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts, or tell any smart home device to fire up Comic Book Nation Podcast. If you want to follow the show, you can follow us at the at Comic Book Nation Twitter handle, or you can check us out individually. I am at Kofi Outlaw.
I am Matt Aguilar CB.
I am at Janelle Wheeler.
And I'm at Charlie Ridgely.
Thank you. I didn't expect that to go so quickly or so smoothly, but thank you. All right. If you like the show, go on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. Otherwise, we will see you next Wednesday. If you want some more comic book content, check out our Phase Zero podcast, our Marvel podcast on Fridays. Thank you guys for tuning in again. This has been Comic Book Nation. We're out.